Well, I have a very long talk with Conley. I think I shook him quite a bit. And of course, he's a big man, so, you know, there's nothing
he's
petty.
He's kind of a man. It's always an interesting thing. You go to a small man around here, and you don't think such things that may not have been totally in your screen. And he, you know, get on his high horse, but Conley will listen, and so forth. You know, you really, really, you compare him with our other cabin's people, with the exception of Mitchell. There ain't anybody that's leading him.
Well, exactly. I said to him, John, I couldn't care less whether they revalue by 12%, 20%, 2%. If you ever hear me express an opinion on that subject, you know I'm out of my depth. I want to put the foreign policy implications before you. And the strategic problem now is not the rate of exchange, but whether we're going to have a positive program, or whether we're going to wait and let the situation drift along. Well, I think he basically agreed. But he says, and he's right, that the disloyalty in the administration is such that everyone is cutting him out.
Well, he doesn't endure, does he?
Oh, no. He knows. I told him I'm not... No, he meant others are cutting him up outside, to the press and to the foreigners.
Sure.
And therefore his game plan, which might work, just can't be carried to the absolute extreme. I think he's ready to go and make a positive proposal.
Did you mention the Cromer?
I mentioned the Cromer thing. He found that interesting. And he's mulling over two approaches now, either the Cromer approach or the approach that he makes a speech in which he puts out the proposal. I told him it might be a little better to let it generate from the others, because if he makes a proposal,
they'll bargain it down.
They'll bargain it down, while if they make one, he can bargain it up. And it puts us into a better position. I think the biggest problem over there is that he is fine.
But
when he gets together with Volcker and Walker, they'll go back to the old treasury lines. And I suggested, he said that he wanted to get together with me again this week. Now, I stayed nearly 2 hours with him. We had a very warm talk.
Incidentally, didn't he have good feelings on this?
Good feeling.
On the trip, his intuition, I mean. Well, you notice he's thought so much of the Indonesians.
Yeah.
Sahardo is how he wants to invade so he can aid the Cambodians, which isn't too bad an idea.
No, he's a proud man. And he isn't, in all respects, easy to deal with, but he's a big man. And you don't have this little petty crap. I told him a little bit of what you went through last week.
Good. What did he say?
Well,
what did he think you're an actor?
Well, he thinks the only vulnerability you have next year is your extreme kindness to a associate. And that permeates everything. They just don't think you're dangerous enough to tackle. He feels it's unbelievable. He's never seen anything like that. And that was his view. You ask him, I just volunteered. He says, until somebody gets carried out feet first from your office someday, they just won't stay up. And that in turn makes us vulnerable. He feels, for example, and he must have told you that on foreign aid, we shouldn't have crapped around foreign aid. We should have said this attacks our foreign policy, our world role.
Well, I told that to Rogers.
I know, but they wouldn't do it.
Bill didn't buy that.
No.
He didn't want to say that it was a great... We had that line out a few seconds.
I think it was our first reaction.
Yeah.
That's what you approved that first night.
The idea that this was a basic attack on our whole foreign policy. And don't talk of foreign aid, our whole foreign policy administration.
But he had tremendous admiration for you, and he was really very candid in general, so I would have thought he would have been candid to me too on this too. And he said it's just that softness in the administration that makes everyone cover his own rear end. No one is out He said, these guys ought to be out defending you, talking you up. And I'm just repeating what he said, and I did not put him up to it. In fact, I didn't put him up to it, because the conversation, as far as I was concerned, was geared to the international situation. And that, of course, he doesn't do. He, you know,
Bill was very upset about being true on and so forth and so on. You heard about the picture?
I heard about the picture. I don't know if they didn't hear about the Rogers affair.
I said, well, Bill, it's a great captain and so forth. And Bob Alderman, I said, now, Bill, you know very well. He says, of course, you know, he's got a reasonable life. And Bill says, all right, Mark, Bill's a traitor. Now, he just talks about life, Mark, you're talking about
the crisis. That's the point.
Just got a balance of who's going to hit somebody, who's going to defend him, who's going to step up to this thing. And that's really the case. We just haven't got, we got people that like to be liked. They like to say positive. Now, Conley steps up to him. He's not a Democrat, but he steps up better than anybody else. Of course, you got to realize that in the domestic field, the correspondential field, that he's so expected to, that doesn't come down.
Now, if Mitchell doesn't harass you, I mean, Mitchell doesn't come weeping over him in that sorry performance last week.
What did Conley think of the performance?
Well, he just said it was unbelievable. It was unconscionable, is the word he used.
But to go through it,
well, to put you through it when you have to get ready for television.
Yeah, hell, I was getting ready for a lot of other things, too, not just that subject.
And
they were worried about that, but Henry, I had to answer questions on base, too.
And everyone knows, Mr. President, that what we're doing is precarious.
So you're both agreeing there's no good choice. It's a question of which is the least bad. We took the least bad. And maybe it's good.
Congressman Mahon called me. They're voting on the Boland Amendment tomorrow, which is the House version of the Mansfield Amendment. He's worried that we may lose it.
Why the hell would we lose it? I just can't understand why we lose it.
Well, I'm writing, getting a speech written for him, getting it over.
For Mahon?
Yeah, I mean, talking for him, not a speech.
You know, the only reason we lose it or lose anything is from the Congress, including on nationally, some sort of Democrats are starting to come and then peel off. But the Congress is simply trying to get ahead of the president.
I think, Mr. President, if they really screw us, if then the negotiations deadlock this Friday, this Saturday, you might consider going on television earlier and saying, this is what these guys did to us. This is what these guys did to us. The week before the last one, they had the Mansfield Amendment. The week before this one, they've got the Boland Amendment. That's if it fails. If it looks good, we... But I think we'll get Connolly. I think Connolly will move in the right direction. I think so. If Volcker can be... I also suggested to him that we should, that Schulte and I should start having our breakfast meetings again. And I think he agrees with that.
I think it's very important.
See, he doesn't know a hell of a lot about the foreign policy side of this. And he said he found out talking points, which I sent him to try down. And he handled them very skillfully. You know, he told me that he went in there in every case like a country boy. And said the president asked Dr. Kissinger to prepare these talking points especially for you, and then he just read them.
You read them, right? Isn't that good?
Which was very clever. Much better than if it sounded as if he had said it himself.
Right. Which is what
he called it. Exactly. And which also shows a certain kind of unselfishness. And I'm really impressed. He's very perceptive in his comments.
How do you like it?
Okay. Yeah, it's so amazing to me how a man can think of himself in that category. We're doing very well, Mr. President, and all is said and done.
He liked the press conference last week. He said,
well, that was outstanding. That was really great.
He writes no comment.
And I've been newsweek. I haven't seen Time yet, and they've treated it very respectfully. You know, that sort of petty nitpicking around. And it's on the whole, they're writing it the way we want it written. They say there's some unanswered questions. What if I know I won't negotiate? How these questions we know ourselves. Now, the major thrust that comes across from the way we handled this last one, the way you handled the press conference, is you're up to something, you have a strategy, you know what you're doing. Then, of course, they can pick away at the fringes of it. If you had given the final announcement, they'd be roaring now. They'd be introducing resolutions, and 4 months would really be
soon enough. The residual force is too big, and what are you going to do about the prisoners? You know, they know, and we couldn't be more right.
I think we're in basically good shape. Connolly thinks you're unbeatable, except for the weakness, our own internal weakness.
Well, what the hell do you think we should do? Fire?
I think
you're much good.
I must say, in retrospect, I think we should. I was against it, but I think we should have made a change in state last summer. At that time, I thought we had it under control, and I. It isn't such. Well, either then or this year.
Oh.
This spring.
This summer.
Yeah, this summer. It isn't so much that what Bill does, it's that everyone in his bloody department thinks they can take us on and leak, and they just don't build any real loyalty. On the other hand, one has to weigh the danger of having him out. And the fact that a new man couldn't really reorganize the department now. Connolly thinks that this is a big weak spot. He told me his frank opinion on that. He also thinks defense needs a strong man. Those, he thinks, are the two. He thinks those are the two weak, the big weak points. He says no one, neither of these departments is up there fighting for you. Or out among the press fighting for you. They're all out. And one has to say, last week, particularly defense, this really was their whole strategy of how they can get credit for themselves. So I don't know whether, I'm not sure that we ought to fire a cabinet member now.
It's too late.
It may be too, it's probably later. Too late. It's too late. Of the possibility, without saying there was a Russian offer, I packaged it as if it were a possible idea, and he ran back to Israel right away. And he's now He got message that he's on his way back, and he has an order to see me straight off the airplane. So now, we don't know how much they're going to play.
Good. Well, we'll grasp that when the time is.
Well, you haven't got all the facts yet. We'll have to see what they'll do.
What's the next step on Connolly?
Look, the next step on Connolly is that I'm going to see him again this week.
What about Schultz? You're sure he hasn't got the impression that they're trying to cut it from here?
Absolutely not.
That's important. That's why I said...
No, Mr. President.
You went over basically because, you know,
I told him that I frankly hadn't gone with you into the detail I was going to attend. I said, I'm not coming as the president's emissary. I'm coming as your friend. I said, I'm not going to give you any trouble. I'm not going to work against you. I'm not going to have a confrontation with you in front of the president or anything like this. I'm telling you as a friend. You've now smashed the existing system. No one would have had the guts to do it except you. All these guys who are crying now would have settled last September for the cheapest term. Now, I think it is my judgment if you want to emerge as a statesman out of this, you have to move into the constructive phase. It's always a question of timing. And he said he agreed. I said, I'm not in there to tell you. He agreed, for example, that there might be a 5% change in the price of gold.
Did he?
Yeah, as long as there's no convertibility.
So that's one way, isn't it? To buy off Arthur's goddamn seals on the bench that we can get in there.
Now, you do this with Pompidou, Mr. President. You can have a series of smashing meetings. If we can get this sorted out before...
I'm here, you've got a great problem with Schultz. Schultz and Pierce.
Oh, you'll go along with it now.
5%?
Yeah, I talked to him.
All right,
you
play
see,
that line.
You see, Mr. President?
You see, let me tell you about the price of gold. I don't give a goddamn if it's gold, chrome, or toilet paper.
As long as they can't conserve it.
Well, yeah. Also, I did this. No, of course I'm sure. But my point is, I'm going to get in the Pompidou, get something in him. And if we can do that, that's great.
You see, the Germans are willing to do a 10% overall, but they can do 10% against us, but they cannot do 10% against the French. If we devalue 5% and they revalue 5%, then they're going only 5% against the French, but 10% against us, which is good. While if they do a revaluation against everybody of 10%, that's too much for them. And Connolly agreed with that. I'm not worried about it.
5% doesn't worry him, then.
No. I said 3 or 4. He said, no, hell, we can go up to 5 if we do it.
You know, if we can do that, I'd like to bust it wide open that way.
Well, that's what I think you should do, Mr. President. I think you should be the guy who puts the new international system together.
It'll be a floating system, but...
No, it wouldn't be necessarily floating. It would be...
Well, how can it not be floating if it's not convertible, it has to float?
Well, you could do it with SCRs.
That's convertible.
Yeah. Well, that means convertible into gold, Mr. President, so that we can keep the gold with us.
One other thing that you would say here, you know, for a future study, the cutting of all the national aid and transferring it bilateral. I don't know what the hell's going to happen. I think we're going to get the hell out of some of this small national
aid. I think if we are spending our resources, we should do it well.
Yeah.